Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Squawker Talker Women's Football Podcast. This week we've got a bit of an England special with the Lionesses playing two games over the international break against France and Canada. I'm one of your hosts, Harry Edwards, and I'm joined as always by Mariam Naz. Mariam, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I've been fasting this week, so anyone listening who is fasting, it's been a bit of a difficult week, but I think you kind of get used to it after a while. And of course, also Ramadan Mubarak again to anyone who's listening. And yeah, I'm ready to talk about England.
Yeah, I suppose we should, but let's be honest, it wasn't a good international break for England. It started against what you could call a weakened France squad because they have their COVID issues, mostly with the Lyon and Paris Saint-Germain teams. But they looked pretty comfortable against England. Sondi Baltimore opened the scoring. Asseyi and Frank Kirby both scored a penalty for each side. And then Marie-Antoinette Katoto wrapped up the win for France. Defensively, I think, is probably best to start with. England looked poor.
Yep, I think one thing that we were discussing briefly off air was that as a team, England looked poor. The cohesion at the back, communication was poor in the central areas and the flank areas, which is what where France are really exploiting. And as you mentioned, it came as a bit of a shock because their side was already weakened. We know that in the league, the two teams, PSG and Lyon, those are the sides that were weakened by COVID at the moment. And yet, they were still pushing us back and they were creating a lot of spaces in transition, and that was kind of a bit of a concerning thing for me.
Yeah, I think when people look at England, they look at, you know, the fullbacks you do have Lucy Bronze and Alex Greenwood, which are the two that spring to mind when everyone talk about the England fullbacks. But it's a problem, you know, those, like you said, those wide areas, people really look at England and they know that they can hurt you down they can hurt them down the wings. But I think it's also a problem centre backs. I mean, we're just naming all the defence, but the problem with the centre backs right now, I think, with when Steph Horton's not in the team, is you normally go for Millie Bright and Leah Williamson, who at club level both play on the right, but when they play together for England, one of them has to go to their less natural position on the left. And I think we've spoken on previous podcasts about Millie Bright before and how good she is for Chelsea, and Leah Williamson's the same for Arsenal. But there's just something about them together that just doesn't really click right now, and it's a problem.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed about Millie Bright, at least on a club level with Chelsea, she normally does very well when she's playing with her first-choice centre-back partner, which is Magda Eriksson. However, when she is playing against a player she's not used to playing against, or where she needs to lead or take control a little bit, like play like Hannah Blundell, or if Sophie Ingle was back there for whatever reason, she really struggles. And I think that in an England perspective, it's kind of similar. When you're playing with a teammate who's not in their natural position, you need to be a bit more aware of them. And I think that those two together are getting a bit caught out, because again, as you mentioned, it's for one of the players, it's not their natural position. And for the other, in Millie Bright, she's used to very much playing forward in a way that most defenders, or most central defenders in the league, don't. She plays out a lot from the back, so it's a bit of a mismatch. But as you mentioned, the bigger concern is on the flanks, because the two players you mentioned, Alex Greenwood and Lucy Bronze, those are world-class players. Those are players who know what they're doing in those positions, and it shouldn't really be a weakness or a target area for us.
Yeah, and the France game specifically, we have both mentioned Lucy Bronze, and that's a long-term issue, but this was a problem that we'd seen before under Phil Neville. Rachel Daly playing at right back, and as you said about Millie Bright and Chelsea with players playing out of position, Rachel Daly is not a right back, and that just adds to the problems that Millie Bright specifically has, because she's the one out of her and Leah Williamson, she's the one that does keep her position on the right, but now she's having to do more work because Daly is looking to get up and down the flanks as her experience as an attacking player. And I think going on to the attack, you mentioned about the lack of cohesion in defence, and there was a lack of cohesion in attack as well. So it was a 4-2-3-1. The four attacking players, Beth Mead, Frank Kirby, Nikita Paris and Ellen White, they're all, you know, fantastic players. There's no denying that. But they looked, you know, to put it simply, they looked like they were four individuals rather than a unit playing together. And I know they for international level, they only have a short amount of time to work together, as every nation does. But you see so many other countries manage to get their players to gel so much easier than England are right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you mentioned they're looking at like a group of individuals rather than a team, when England do their team selections, they actually do these sort of inter games. They play players in different positions against each other to kind of glean which player is best for what position. So it's not even like the players have just been thrown on because we have the attacking capability to do so. This is you know, a tactical decision that's been made, and in a way that obviously the managers thought that it would bring out the most against France, and that hasn't happened at all. So it kind of concerns you about whether this is the right tactical formation for us, whether it's a problem because we're playing Ellen White and Nikita Paris in varying positions, whether Fran Kirby's getting enough space to do what she does with Chelsea. I think there are a lot of questions that need to be asked.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting and probably difficult time for Hege Riise. You know, she's been brought in as step one of the post Phil Neville era, but you know, she's not going to be here in a couple of months' time. You know, so it must be hard for her to come into the job knowing that she can't really lay too many foundations, because you know, when Serena Wiegmann comes in September, all that work that Hege Riise might have put in, it could completely go. You know, she could want something completely different. So I think I agree with what you said about playing, you know, I think she's playing the names maybe more than the form right now. So like we said about Rachel Daly at right back, and you know, I'm a fan of Beth Mead, but I think there are other players who probably would be starting ahead of her based on form right now. But it's tough for Riise, and I think it was a similar case against Canada. This was a 2-0 defeat. There's a better performance, I'd say, from England compared to against France. But here we go again, talking about the defence. You know, two massive errors. First from Demi Stokes and the second from Karen Barnsley at either end of the game.
Yeah, you do have to feel for Karen Barnsley, because you don't know whether or not this is going to be one of the last games in an England shirt, or whether there is going to be much game time for her in the upcoming games that are coming. And It was just a poor choice. And I think as I was watching the replay of that goal that Canada scored to make it 2-0, I could see what she was trying to do. She was trying to go for that outside pass, and I can't remember which player was making themselves available on that left side, but she was trying to make that pass. What she should have done is either brought the ball the other way against the run of the defender, or simply cleared it, and that was just poor decision, and the attacker got there before she could release. But even if that was like a standalone thing, you might understand, you know, it happens, keeper mistakes happen. But then again, you mentioned the issue with Demi Stokes and the mistake that she made, and it's like that's happened because the passing has been poor and the awareness in defence has been poor, and it's very much part of a bigger problem, I think. And I wonder whether it's not just specific now to what Hege Riise is doing, whether it's something that we've seen in previous tournaments as well.
Yeah, it has been a long-standing issue, and I think you nailed it with, you know, the lack of awareness of what's around them from Stokes and Barnsley. With Stokes, she dealt with the initial ball well. The striker was offside, as the ball came in, but it was that next touch that Stokes took that played in the attacker to score. If she was aware of her surroundings, she wouldn't have done that. She'd have cleared it, even if it's you know, given away a corner if you need to. And it's the same for Barnsley, like you said. I think it was Williamson that was opening up, because it was Millie Bryant that played the ball back to her, and I was looking, and I know on commentary there was some hints of Millie Bryant getting some of the blame there, but I don't think there was much she could do, because the run that Nichelle Prince was making to close her down and then close Bardsley down for the goal, the only option for Bright was to play it to Bardsley. And again, I think just like Demi Stokes, she just needed to boot it. You know, I know teams want to play out the back, and you know, when you get it right, it's brilliant. But there are still times where you need to push that to one side. And like I said, the defence right now is something that's been a problem for quite a while. It doesn't help that you've got, again, at the start of the game against Canada, you've got Rachel Daly at right back, you've got Demi Stokes, who hasn't been playing that much for Man City this season. Again, picking on names, maybe. And yeah, something that definitely needs to be sorted out. And I think the same can be said for the attack again, because it was another poor show from the England forwards.
Yeah, but seeing our notes, we mentioned 14 shots, but only 4 on target. And as you said before, an attack that involves Fran Kirby, Ellen White, Nikita Paris, you know, Beth Mead, and only to have 4 shots on target, that's concerning. We know what these players are capable of at league level within their clubs. We know how many goals Frank Kirby scored. We know about Ellen White's presence. And for that to be the culminating result, that kind of concerns me a little bit. And it seems to be a running theme. So we saw it against France, and we're seeing it against Canada. The tactical choice of what, as you mentioned, what players have been picked. Maybe there have been other players that would have got ahead if it wasn't Reece managing. However, I think the formation isn't helping either, because it doesn't allow Fran Kirby enough space to do what she's doing for Chelsea. And I think that having White and Paris both operating off each flank, it didn't create that central space for a striker. I feel like I'm nitpicking a little bit. I don't exactly want to feel like that. And I know, as you mentioned again, you know, manager just come in and she's not going to be here for long, but I just feel like we could have done so much better in attack across these two performances.
No, I think you're right. Like you said, and I'm the same, I don't want to, you know, be overly critical, because, you know, Risa is only here for a few months. But this, if you look, again, like you said, if you look at the talent that this England side has, you've got to be expecting more. And I know the players will be expecting more. So I don't think we're wrong to criticise the way they're playing, especially when, like you said, look at how they're all doing in the league. You know, you've got Fran Kirby, who across all competitions has been directly involved in over 30 goals for Chelsea. Beth England, even though she's not playing as much for Chelsea, she's still getting in the goals. Ellen White, even Jordan Nobbs, she's back, and she's back in form for Arsenal, and it's just not translating. Do you have any additional thoughts on Hegger Riese's England, which I believe this might be the end of her time as England manager, and she's in charge of Team GB, and we'll get into that in a second. But then any more thoughts or opinions on what Riese's done with England?
I think first of all, I'd like to say, picking up from where Phil Neville left off and the catastrophe and what happened with him leaving and looking for other clubs and you know, everything that's happened with Phil Neville and having to come in from that, I think that in itself should be applauded, because it was difficult. It was difficult for the players, and it's been difficult for the club and for everyone involved. And she just came straight in and knew exactly what she was doing. And I think that maybe sometimes her style and way of playing hasn't transferred to the team. And maybe that again comes from lack of time in training and things like that. But I think that there's definitely promise here. It's just a shame that we're still finding areas of weakness. And I think a longer term duration under a different manager, which we will see eventually after the Olympics. I think that's really going to cement the work she started here.
Yeah, England do have a lot of talent on their hands, and we know that all the members of the England squad for the international break just gone will be on the 35-player shortlist for Team GB. Plus, we can assume Steph Horton will be added to that list as well, and it goes down to 18. Again, based on the international break and the England performances just gone, were there any England players across those two games that, for you, you know, showed that they have to be in that final 18?
I think it's difficult because what we don't know is what's happening in training and when they play those sort of inter games against each other and in varying positions. That's a difficult one. You'd like to think that Ebony Salmon has kind of worked her way into that just based on her league performances and maybe some of her work in training. But I feel like it's kind of the other players have made it known that they deserve to be there. Players like Fran Kirby and Ellen White and Lily Bright. Those are the players I think that have cemented their positions, even though I don't think that those players played also all that well across these two games.
Yeah, it is hard to make a conclusion on, you know, if you just look at how the team as a whole performed. There is one that really caught the eye for me, and she's caught my eye for probably for this season and beyond, but especially in the past few weeks and for England, Lauren Hemp. When she came on against France, I'd say, you know, for me, she was England's best attacking player. And, you know, again, against Canada, she was a danger. It didn't quite work for her from the start against Canada. But she has the willingness to take players on, particularly fullbacks down to the byline to then either dribble it in or cut it in. And I think that's something that England have been missing. I think they do, attacking wise, they do a lot of their work centrally. They rely on the overlapping fullbacks, especially Lucy Bronze on that right hand side. But I think Hemp gives, I don't want to call it a plan B because I don't think it should be a plan B. I think it should be part of plan A, but she gives that something different. And once they get used to once the non-Manchester City players get used to how she plays and what to expect from her and what she expects from them, I think she's going to be one of the, you know, stars of the future. And I think she needs to do that at the Olympics if it does go ahead, because there are still doubts again.
Yeah, no, I'd agree, because I think that once again that there are certain positions within the team that are still kind of in contention, like you mentioned Lauren Hemp filling that filling that spot there in midfield. That kind of is something that we struggle with. There are other players I think that have tried to do that position. I think Kira Walsh is one of them, Sophie Ingle you might think of, but I think what Hemp does and also the contributions he has to attack, I think that's something that England almost feel like they're missing at the moment.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sophie Ingle there. Obviously Team GB is not just England, even though England are going to make up, you'd assume, most of the squad given the, you know, their presence on the 35-player shortlist, which would be 26, so nine remaining spots for non-English players, so for Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. Are there any non-England players that for you need to be in the final squad? I know you've mentioned Sophie Ingle. Would you think she should be there or anyone else?
I think with Sophie Ingle, it's almost a difficult one, because if you look at her involvement in Chelsea's team, it's not almost that strong, only because Chelsea have gone away from her in the midfield to a double pivot with Melanie Leupolz and G. So they're really kind of going strong with that. She's used often as a fringe player, you know, but we've needed her in recent games in defence and in various positions. But I don't know whether that translates to her inclusion in that squad. In terms of her talent and her skill, I think she's someone who's very versatile. She's really good in transition play, and she can play a lot of positions across the 6, 8, number 10 roles. You know, we've seen her in attacking roles, we've seen her in defensive roles as well. So I think she definitely is someone you'd kind of love to have on hand if needed. But it's difficult because I don't know whether or not she'd be prioritised more than other players.
Yeah, it is You know, I think it's all dependent on what formation Risa wants to play and how she wants to play. Because like you said, Ingle, she is brilliant in that holding midfield role, the defensive midfield role, but she's just not getting that game time at Chelsea. And, you know, if you're basing it on game time and form, there are other players that you might say would deserve a spot more. And I think it also depends on whether they do want her for the versatility, the option to drop back and centre back just in case. You know, with an 18-person squad, you've got very little room for coverage, you know, at World Cups, and that we're used to seeing 23 players. So you can have a couple in each position. So I think Inga was a good shout because of, like I said, the utility player that she can be. And I think England can maybe also look to the other nation. Sorry, I think Risa and Team GB can look to the other nations other than England to fill some of their weaker spots, like the fullbacks, and especially for me, Emma Mitchell at left back for Reading and Scotland. We saw over the past two England games, like we said, Demi Stokes at left back. She's a good defender, but it didn't work. Alex Greenwood, she's more used to playing centre back for Man City now, so you know it might be harder for her to switch between and go back to left back at national level. I think Emma Mitchell is a good option. And again, depending on how Reece wants to play Erin Cuthbert, she adds that tenacity in the attack if she wants to press high. And obviously you've got the likes of Caroline Weir, Jess Fishlock, Kim Little, Lisa Evans. There are so many good players. And obviously Northern Ireland have just had the boost of qualifying for Euro 2022. So, you know, their players will be on a high. I think it's England, well, Team GB are restricting themselves by having so many England players in their shortlist. Obviously, England are the bigger nation football-wise. But, yeah, I think it's going to be very restricted. It'll be interesting to see what Risa does. You know, she's obviously had the experience with this England lot. They're going up against nations that play together all the time. And obviously, this is something that we don't get with Team GB. You know, you've got four countries, in our eyes, playing against each other, but for every 4 years they're expected to join together. And I don't think Risa can ignore the likes of, like we've said, Ingle, Cuthbert, Evans, Mitchell and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay, so I rambled a bit there. I think that's pretty much the international break wrapped up. And there's no WSL this weekend, but the FA Cup fourth round here, and WSL and Championship teams have joined the competition. You know, there are a lot of David and Goliath ties, as you know, in a sense, but there are three all WSL ties. We've got Man City up against Aston Villa, Reading taking on Tottenham, and Brighton playing Bristol City. All games are on Sunday, except for Chelsea against London City Lionesses are playing Friday, and Man City against Aston Villa is on Saturday, and they've both been moved because of the, you know, what we can call the WSL title decider between Chelsea and Man City, which is next Wednesday, but we'll get into that next week. Just a quick look at the ties, both all WSL and the mix and match ones, you know, can we expect any upsets?
Well, the one that kind of stands out for me in terms of upsets is the Reading-Tottenham game. And I only say that because we've discussed Rahane Skinner so much on this pod. We mentioned before about how she had to come in after Juan Amoros and the team, and how there was an uptick in form. However, that seemed to have dropped again, and you know, the absence of Alex Morgan and that lack of central presence and the heavy reliance on the flank play through Neville and also Ayane. I think that I think that playing Reading, a team who have actually done fairly well in the defensive sense this season, I think they're going to be even more frustrated, you know, even because they're already struggling in attacking sense to produce goals. And I think that's going to be frustrated by a very low block from Reading. And I think that there's potential that there could be a result there for Reading.
Yeah, I think that is one of the more open ties in the round. But still, I agree with you. I think Reading will have the upper hand. But then I think for the rest of the WSL teams, we've got, you know, Chelsea playing a Championship side, Arsenal, Man United playing teams that aren't, you know, they're not playing football anymore. You know, this is, or they're not playing league football. Obviously, they're playing in the FA Cup, but that's it. You know, their leagues have stopped. And I think it's unfortunate. I'm not saying that they would have caused an upset before, but I think it's going to increase the distance of quality between the teams. I am expecting a WSL heavy fifth round. Again, I think Reading could get the better of in that all WSL tie. And I think Brighton and Bristol City is a really interesting game as well. You know, you've got two teams who they're not equal in terms of the league. You know, Brighton are the better team, but in this one-off fixture, you know, there is every chance that Bristol City can, you know, pull off what would be the upset.
Yep, there's definitely a chance. I think we just kind of have to go in there with the expectation that there could be a lot of upsets there. Teams, especially the bigger teams like Man City, you know, Chelsea, those are teams that will be rotating and they won't be playing their first team squads, obviously, because they will be resting players for the league now that we're kind of getting into the business end of things. So if there's a chance, then there is a chance here for those teams to cause something.
Yeah, there definitely is with the, like you said, with the rotations, because they will rotate and, you know, it won't be as easy. But I think that's all we've got time for this week, but things will turn up again in future as the WSL approaches its climax and we've got the Champions League semi-finals coming around. It's a very exciting time once again for women's football towards the end of the season. But until next time, please do continue to listen, like and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll speak to you next time.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.